Okay, this is another session in our ongoing series on the laws of life. Our law tonight is the law of assembly. You may not have heard of that, at least not since high school, when you were forced to go to assembly. This is a totally different type of assembly, however. This is how God created mankind. Some assembly required. Been waiting all day to give you that line. In any event, the question is, what is the divine law of assembly, and how can an aspirant best harness it? I've shuffled the cards, laid them out, and this is what we came up with. The starting point is the devil, right side up.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. That's good news. The counterpoint is the sun, upside down. The challenge is the Knight of Pentacles, right upside down. The purpose is the hermit, upside down. The hermit is number 9. I forgot to mention that the sun is 19 and the devil is 15, which makes 6. And in the case of the sun, a 1. The endowment is the 7 of Cups, right side up, which I'm told was also the card last time in the real question position. The card of destiny is the King of Pentacles, right side up. The real question is the 7 of Rods, right side up. The unseen forces, the King of Rods, upside down. And then we end with 2 more majors, them being the spiritual ideal is the hangman upside down. That's a 12 or a 3. And the culmination is temperance upside down. Temperance is 14. So we go from 15, the devil, to 14, temperance. And we end up with 5 majors, no swords, 2 rods, 1 cup, and 2 pentacles. We have, among those cards are 2 kings, the King of Pentacles and the King of Rods. That's quite significant because this is a law that applies to masters or mastery. And until one has mastered the physical and the mental levels, it has a philosophical application, but not a direct practical one. And by mastering the physical plane, the cards are referring to the cosmic etheric plane, which is the 7 subplanes of the cosmic physical or etheric level, which is what we deal with. Okay, so we have 5 majors, no swords, 2 rods, I already mentioned this, 1 cup, and 2 pentacles. The card that really sticks out, of course, is the devil, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I think where I want to start is the King of Rods and the unseen factor. And that's very important because unseen forces and factors are very important in this reading. This reading doesn't have a whole lot to do with ordinary life on Earth, which is mostly absorbed in the trivia of the physical plane. It has more to do with the way, as I indicated or joked earlier, it has more to do with the way God assembled forces to get creation moving. And in our real-time concept of life here on Earth, it has to do with understanding how important the influence of zodiacal forces is upon us, that our life is being shaped far more than we understand by energies and patterns and whatnot from other sources, i.e. from rays and from zodiacal forces. One of the ways in which very, very little of human life. One of the concepts that this applies to is the idea that we're part of a life within a larger life within a larger life within a larger life, and so on, ad nauseum. And we can't understand our little life unless we understand the larger forces at work shaping it. And that is the implication here. The actual occurrences on the physical plane may seem terribly important to each of us, but when put into perspective, they're relatively minor and insignificant compared to the forces that are flowing in. One of the points that the Tibetan makes in all the Alice Bailey books, or Alice makes in her books, is that the Earth is a non-sacred planet, and one of the reasons why we're here developing consciousness is to learn to contribute to the consecration of the planet Earth. Now, there's two ways of doing that. We can do it, we play our part by facing the challenges of Earth and cleaning things up, the ancient residue of evil and so on that we confront in mass consciousness and in our political conditions in the nation and so on, but in society. But there's another way, too, that this is done, and that the being that is the logos of the earth is constantly working to attune himself, herself, itself, whatever, any way you want to think of it, to the higher forces, just as we try to attune ourselves to the soul and its qualities of harmony and love and joy and wisdom and whatnot. We can think of the logos of the planet attuning itself in a massive way to the qualities as they are exhibited in the zodiac. Joy, etc., peace, harmony. And that's an important work. And it's an ongoing work that wasn't just all done in the 7 days of creation, symbolically speaking, but it's an ongoing thing. And as we achieve mastery over our own human consciousness, we can begin to get glimpses into the way the Logos itself is doing it, and the hierarchy on its behalf is attuning itself to these extra systemic forces. And this explains a lot of the importance of astrology and the zodiac in our lives. It also, I want to call attention to the Seven of Rods and the King of Rods. There's only two rods, but they're back to back there. And certainly the King of Rods indicates mastery of the mind and talks to us about the mind. It reminds us of the phrase that first appeared in Casey, the mind is the builder. And the mind is not a builder in form so much as it's a builder in character and a builder in the abstract mental plane. It's a builder of genius, patterns of genius, which the genius behind a book, the genius behind a piece of art, the genius behind a piece of music, these are all the permanent creations of these talented humans at the abstract mental levels. And when you're reading a book or watching a play, you should tune into the pattern of genius that it's linked to. Okay, we understand that concept, or at least we're familiar with it. And this is much the same thing. The law of assembly is the process by which God assembles, or any divine worker, divine agent, the Spirit of America, members of the hierarchy, masters, etc., our work to gather the forces flowing into the system from the zodiac, from astrological sources, and put them together into ideas that become the blueprints, the templates, the archetypes of divine life and can be discovered by human life. And then human creativity imitates that, or replicates that, and brings these ideas and concepts and forces down into human expression assuming that it's inspired, as most poetry and music and art is. You don't find it too much in the works of Jean-Paul Sartre or Pablo Picasso because they're not inspired at that level. They're reacting to the emotional level. All right, so going back to the beginning, the first card is the devil. The starting point is the devil. And that's a good starting point because this energy, at first blush, or first contact, seems to be destructive. It's destructive in the sense that oftentimes it's important to dismantle old forms and old traditions before you can create and build new forms and new traditions. So we have to come, agents have to come into the earth plane and destroy old, worn-out glamours and thought forms. The glamour is represented in the Seven of Cups of the past, so that we can then create new emanations as symbolized in the King of Pentacles in the card of the Destiny. So the devil is here to remind us that this is a Rewan destructive force, and therefore not something to try. Don't do this on your own. Don't try this at home. This is the law of assembly is an important one to understand philosophically, but it's mostly to be wielded by masters and the divine forces, divine agents that understand how to harness this and aren't tempted to use it. Let me put it this way. If the people who resented the Trayvon Martin decision had access to this kind of power, to the law of assembly, most of us would be French fried by now because they wouldn't be able to handle it. They would be French fried, but so would we. And that's largely what happened to cause the fall of Atlantis, the collapse of Atlantis. People got a hold of energy that they couldn't handle. At a divine level, there needs to be the destruction of the past. And in eons gone by, that was satisfied by warfare or the occasional plague. But now, as we've learned to solve problems, keep warfare to a minimum, I'm afraid that what we saw in the last century of massive purgations in Russia and China and Vietnam and other places like that were indications of this destructive energy being used to help humanity clear the past of all the debris and move forward into the future. The devil card is a card, obviously, of the anthropomorphic devil. It's also a card of division. It creates the polar opposites. It separates the male and the female, the right and the wrong, the left and the right, so that they are, it creates a schism between them so that they interact back and forth, seeking a reunion, and the two become as one. In a philosophical way of doing, and that, of course, is just part and parcel of life on the physical plane, and every creative person learns to cope with that and deal with that, and somehow strive to unite that which is with that which is not. In a very poetic way, this card tells us that if you understand the law of assembly, you can use it to overcome your doubt. You can destroy the patterns of doubt because the doubt is simply the schism between doubt and trust. We have on all of our coins "In God We Trust," but of course there's large groups in this country that actually practice and advocate "In God We Doubt." Now, if you understand the law of assembly and that God is constantly drawing all these energies in and working with them creatively, and that this is the highest form of creativity, then it becomes possible to understand that doubt and trust are just the divided halves of the single whole of reality. And that if you understand that, then there's no doubt. There can be no doubt because you understand the process. So the law of assembly defeats doubt because it indicates that, first of all, there's a divine plan. It results in the creation of divine archetypes which govern life on earth. And it links us and attunes God to higher systemic forces that are constantly nurturing and feeding growth and progress in the human family. And even when human beings run around like chickens with their head cut off, meaning they aren't thinking at all, there is no reason to doubt the divine plan. You just don't trust human beings very much. And that's understandable because most human beings seek out the lowest common denominator, not the highest explanation. Some of you probably got my announcement that this month, the coming month, August, the Thinking Out Loud session will be held on the 13th. I got an email back after I sent that out from one of our local people who sent regrets because he and his wife would be on vacation in Michigan. And their goal, the topic, he said, sorry to miss talking about the goal of human living, which is the announced topic. But he said, while we're in Michigan, our goal will be to simply stay away from the heat down south. And I thought about that with a chuckle because it nicely illustrates this. It was a joke, and I don't mean this in a critical fashion, but to a large degree, he thinks of Thinking Out Loud as an opportunity to think and opine, whereas I approach Thinking Out Loud as an opportunity to bring the abstract levels of thought down into human thinking and make a connection between the divine and human thinking. And there's obviously a gap between his perception and my perception, which is why he doesn't show up all the time. He enjoys it, but for him, it's an hour and a half of personal enjoyment, not a experiment in higher thinking. I would obviously encourage everybody to join. See, to me, Thinking Out Loud is an opportunity for us to create and shape thoughts that can then be part of that level of genius that is kind of the human equivalent of archetypes. And that's what we're talking about here, is shaping, bringing in forces that shape specific ideas. The mind is the builder, and Thinking Out Loud should be at its highest level an exercise in creating thought forms, creating powerful mind ideas. So anyway, and using that to overcome doubt and as a potent weapon to dissolve doubts in mass consciousness is, to me, an exciting prospect. And so when you look at the devil card, don't be distracted by the imagery and the associations. Understand that this is a Ray 1 force. It has this destructive aspect. A good, strong thought will destroy nonsense. And that's one of the things that is happening in our country now, is that all kinds of nonsense being exposed for what it is. And thinking people are meant to object to it and hold it up for ridicule and protest it. All right, so that's the starting point. We go on to the counterpoint, and that's the sun. The sun is bright and cheery self. It's upside down. There's a book down here underneath the words of the sun. And he's just, with his rosy cheeks, he's just beaming away. And this is an issue of as a counterpoint. It's not just the fact that the sun is the center of our system, and it's the porthole through which wisdom flows into our life or into the system, but it's beyond that. Here's a quote from Alice Bailey in Discipleship in the New Age, I think part 2. The monad is the source of light, not only to the human family, but it is the receiver of light from the threefold sun. It is the lens through which the light of the solar logos can flow to the planetary logos, preserving and holding steady in that light the vision, the purpose, the will, and the creative intention of the planetary logos.
A page.
Well, here you can have it. It's page 400 in one of the Dinah's, I think Dinah 2. And so it's, in a large sense, this whole question of the law of assembly is parallel to the, or an implication of the statement in the Sermon on the Mount by the Christ, seeking first the kingdom of heaven, and then all riches and treasures will be added to you, will come to you. Well, this is opening up a whole new level of treasure, higher than heaven, greater than heaven, at a more transcendent level than we've dealt with before. Anyway, the sun is...
Did I hear you read this?
Okay, did you hear me read from Alice?
Page 400.
Page 400 in Discipleship in the New Age.
That's 400. What about where you started to be?
Okay. Well, what this is indicating is that... Well, and then I told my story about thinking out loud.
Yeah.
You probably... Did you hear that?
Yes.
Good. Okay, I won't repeat that. But I'm trying to convey something that is quite abstract here and yet is the ultimate reason for us being here, and that is to help bring extra systemic forces down into the physical plane to transform them. And in a very genuine sense, the law of assembly is the highest form of redemption, and that is the redemption at the level of the abstract mind, leading towards the development of more and more wisdom in the human family. And it may seem like a long, hard slough to get from here to there, but it really isn't. There's a tremendous burgeoning of opportunity that is occurring at this point under this law. Now, going on to the challenge, we have the Knight of Pentacles upside down. The interesting thing about the Knight here is that, of course, you see the Knight, but you don't see the horse. You see the barren desert in the background a little bit, but mostly the attention is on the Knight, on his consciousness, his capacity to work in the etheric level, work in form. But we don't see the horse. We don't see the motivation or the drive. So we're talking about abstract building, the building of abstract patterns. As I indicated earlier, the law of assembly overshadows the or governs the creation of divine archetypes by God based on larger systemic patterns. And so every time we interact with one of these archetypal patterns, every time we invoke harmony or peace or joy, we are working with the law of assembly. We're the beneficiary of the law of assembly. And this is where the pun that I made earlier, for which I apologize, does apply. Some assembly is required. We can't activate our full potential as a human being by remaining sucked down into the sponge of triviality. We have to rise up above it, hence the rising mind that I talk about. And we have to discover the source, the ultimate source of things like joy and harmony and goodwill and wisdom, and see these as vital energies that can be assembled, can be gathered. And the focus, the ability of our mind to focus, allows us to assemble these energies, attract them to us, and assemble them. And at first, The first wave of expressing them is almost always destructive, hence the devil. But now we're seeing that the more we're able to lift the physical plane up to a higher transcendent level and work at a higher level, the more we are able to move forward and express these energies in the physical plane, redeeming it, transforming it, making it sacred. Then we go on to the card of purpose, the Hermit, which is upside down. The Hermit is an old fellow who is looking with his light in the archetypal realms of life for an understanding. And that's exactly, that nails this particular subject, the law of assembly. The law of assembly, again, as I've said now, and is the means by which God shapes the blueprints, the templates for human growth, human expression, and creativity. It's not what we think it is. If you go to the card of what's this card? The position, the card.
Endowment.
The card of endowment. I know, sir, with the
name. Oh, you got it right there.
Yeah, well, right there. Yeah, right there. The card of endowment. If I knew how to read, I could keep up with these things.
Didn't know why you were asking.
The Seven of Cups is of course where humanity today believes that it's driven by personal pleasure and all those weird things coming out of cups. The head trip of the intellectual, New Age trip of the lotus in full lotus, the cobra in full lotus, the bubble philosophy of the butterfly girl, whatever, and all these different, the rainbows, sentimentality, where humanity tends to be driven by all these false issues, all these glamours, which end up dividing us more than uniting us. But as we... And so we look to these things for the source, and we never get there. We never find the true source, because the source is archetypal. It's defined by the hermit looking within, looking for the actual life within the life within the life, and always defining the greater life that is the next step towards the source. And when you find that, then you move on to the card of destiny, and the king is his heart there is a circle within a circle within a circle within a circle, and he's created a sphere of influence in which his ideas apply. And you can see in the background the bull of momentum, the bull of Taurus, and he's driven therefore by forces, by energies, not by forms, but by force. But there are forces that he can trace back to zodiacal influences and divine patterns. And so he's the master of these forces. He's not the slave of them. Whereas all the things in the Seven of Cups, all those glamours, represent addictions that we become enslaved to and do their bidding. We're driven by coarse desires and pleasures and so on. Whereas the King of Pentacles is driven by divine momentum, divine forces from outside of our solar system, in the larger system known as this corner of the Milky Way. That's the esoteric name for it, this corner of the Milky Way. All right, so are learning here that there's so much more to life than we have any understanding. And these energies are known to and are shaped by the hierarchy, by the masters of wisdom. And we mere mortals can be aware of them and understand that there is a law of assembly. We're not going to get any closer to that because, frankly, if you did, you probably would be French fried, and that's not something that I wish for anybody. We come then to the pillar of revelation. We have the seven of rods as the real question now. This is the first of our two rods, and it's, I think, this is the first time I've seen the seven of rods in a little while, and I think it perfectly typifies my idea of the rising mind. He's using the mind to draw up the six rods, so that they grow. This is the impetus behind human growth. You've all heard me talk over and over again for years about the impulse to grow. here in the law of assembly, we're finding the real meaning of that growth. Our growth as human beings is nurtured by the wisdom of the system itself, divine wisdom. And our joy is nurtured by divine joy. And we can't separate that. It's a continuum. We can learn to master it, and that's what we're called for. In the King of Pentacles and the King of Rods, we're called to master our connection with these sources. But we become agents of these energies. So the Seven of Rods, the question becomes, what are we doing to support this growth? And I don't just mean the growth of the intellectual mind or the growth of emotional maturity. Those are starting points, of course. But the real implication here is, what are we doing to promote the growth of creativity? What are we doing to promote the growth of genuine redemption? And taking Walden Ultra is a step in the right direction. That helps solidify these things. Participating in Thinking Out Loud is another step in the right direction. It may just seem like an opportunity for people to get together and talk and without any deeper consequences or implications, but it really is operating under the law of assembly. And if you view it in that way, there's a tremendous creative potential here. Okay, so the real question is, what am I doing to contribute to genuine growth? Not the appearance of growth, not the game of growth, but the real essence of growth, growth in human consciousness. This then leads us naturally to the unseen factors and the unseen forces, the King of Rod. And this itself is one of the great implications of this law of assembly. As I've said, this law of assembly is not something that we can necessarily use today or tomorrow in our own life, although it gives a nice punctuation, an exclamation point to our efforts. But it's good to know, philosophically, it's good to know that there are these unseen forces, the masters of the hierarchy, who, by dint of being crucified or whatever, have learned sacrifice, and they are able to work consciously and deliberately with this energy and use it to shape genuine creative movements in humanity. Not just an occasional Shakespeare, but a genuine movement towards greater goodwill, towards greater cooperation, towards greater scientific breakthrough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're able to inspire the scientists of the world with new insights that trigger medical breakthroughs or the computers or whatever. These are things that are bringing the wisdom of many solar systems into play in our own lifetime. So it's good to know that there are these people who have achieved this level, where they're capable of working directly with these energies of the energies of Shambhala, if you wish. But we can see this in a more concrete level, that the mind is the builder, but it builds at abstract levels. It builds in forces. Hence the phrase, the law of assembly. It's the art of assembling multiple forces and expressing them as force, not trying to convert them into form. Eventually they will filter down into form because receptive geniuses in the physical plane will respond to them and say, oh, I could harness Niagara Falls. Of course, Nikola Tesla did that. And he was responding to this sort of thing. I'm sure that by now if he wasn't able to then, he is one of these people who's able to work with the law of assembly, a very advanced thinker. But he was able to do that. He was able to assemble these things as forces in his mind and then precipitate them into form. We then come to our last two cards in the Pillar of Revelation. and the spiritual ideal is to hang man. And this is a pretty obvious one. It bespeaks the need for reversal and understanding that our true source of life, ideas, and inspiration is the inner planes, the rope by which he's held in place, dangling from the crossbar. Of course, it's upside down. But this card, as you know from other readings and other questions, refers to the need to reverse our attitude towards life. And instead of viewing physical life as so uber important over everything, seeing the inner life of spirit and especially the life of the one life, the monad, as being the source of everything, the source of our growth, the source of our providence, the source of our... I don't suppose I've mentioned that I'm doing a seminar this Sunday on the ocean of life, which is, of course, the source of all the sources, the ultimate source. I guess I just mentioned it. But in any event, we need to begin to view divine life as the genuine source, and not just divine life, but the life in which divine life lives and moves and has its being, the zodiac, if you wish, and see all these things coming in and seeing that we can understand that our life is being nurtured and shaped by these very self-same forces. Then we come to the... And another way of looking at this is this speaks of the sacrifice of redemption. The law of assembly is kind of a outpicturing of the law of sacrifice, that we have grown through learning the art of sacrifice. Now, as we enter into a new era of time, a new dispensation, we will make our forward progress more through mastering the art of assembly than sacrifice. But it's definitely tied to it. We go then to the final card, the fulfillment, and that is temperance. Temperance is an angelic form which is working to gradually upgrade form with light and love and wisdom, and elevate it, redeem it, transform it into something greater than it is. And that's the honeycombed element down there in the torso, which is in a very real sense the transformed ancient evil, residue of ancient evil. And we are meant to understand that the real work of life on earth is this type of transformation from being a non-sacred planet to a sacred planet. And the law of assembly is a guarantee that this work is well underway and progressing in ways that we can scarcely imagine. It's useful to try to imagine, but the progress is measured on a completely different yardstick than we normally measure things. We come up with statistics such as were on the news tonight that the economic growth has gone from this to this over the last 5 years, 10 years, whatever. We consider that be an accurate barometer. It really has no relationship to the vitality of our life in this nation at all. It's a false indicator based on form. We have to develop new measuring standards based on spirit and the evolution of the progress the planetary logos is making towards Earth becoming a sacred planet. That's the real measure. And that's a measure that we have to assume that the masters of wisdom are aware of and working with, and that as we progress on the spiritual path, we come closer and closer to to understanding this. But the point the underlying point here is that all there's all these great patterns that have been built at the abstract level of mind by Shakespeare, by Emerson, by the Buddha, by the Christ, by all these great thinkers. And they exist there. And these are the patterns that most directly, Nikola Tesla, all the people in From Heaven to Earth have done their share of it. And these are the patterns that inspire and human growth and help us translate human potential into human civilization and culture. All right, so this is a very important law. It's important to know that it's there and it is a cornerstone of our growth, but it's also wise to understand that this is a little bit more abstract than we normally use. So the important thing is to understand that what we deal with in our daily lives is an echo of a much greater reality. And the more that echo can be attuned to the greater reality, the more we're bringing love and joy and so on down into the earth plane. And that's what counts. Okay, I'm going to stop and entertain comments and questions.
Carl, I have a question.
Sure.
You were talking about how the law of assembly is an outpicturing of the law of sacrifice, that at some point we're going to make our way, or we will make our way more through the assembly than the law of sacrifice. And I suppose that's through growth if we become, if we attain master level. But would you describe that a little more, just speak to that point a little bit more?
Okay, well, now you understand why, since I began teaching, I've always defined sacrifice as the work of consecrating life, making life sacred. It's not giving things up. See, as long as you think in terms of giving things up, even giving up your life, you're thinking in terms of form, not force. The sacrifice of one's life is the most... I don't want to say insignificant. It's a great step forward, but it's a recognition that it becomes easy to sacrifice one's life when one recognizes that consciousness doesn't die just because the physical form falters. It's consciousness goes on. You're not losing your life, you're simply transferring forms. It's like going into the closet and picking out a new suit of clothing for the next day. And throwing your old shirt and trousers or skirt or whatever into the laundry basket to be cleaned and recycled. You're not really changing who you are, you're just changing your outer garments. And the same thing with the sense of sacrifice. If you think that you have all these treasures of earth and you're willing to sacrifice them, you're just trying to make them sacred. You're just trying to link them. And this is the process of planetary logos, recognizing that the earth as a planet is a non-sacred orb. He, she, it is willing to put it on the altar and sacrifice it in order to get something better. All right, so ultimately, sacrifice is just a way of harnessing the force of love to do the assembly work that we're talking about in the law of assembly. The law of assembly draws in divine energies that we can then use and forge to create patterns of genius, patterns of inspiration, patterns of harmony, patterns of cooperation, etc., etc., etc. And the every time a parent, for example, masters the art of parenting and creates ideal patterns for raising kids, it becomes easier for everybody else to do the same. and it becomes a permanent pattern of assembly. Does that make sense? At abstract levels. So in a future lifetime, you can tune back into it. Anybody else can tune into it. And therefore, it helps shape humanity. But and in that sense, sacrifice being an expression of the love nature grows into the law of assembly, which is more of the mind. Does that answer your question or just confuse you further?
No,
it doesn't answer your question?
Yes, it does. It did not confuse me.
Okay, good.
It enriched me.
Good. Yes.
Could we relate, when we invoke the ideal resolution for an issue, could that somehow be related to this in that we are trying to connect with an ideal pattern, which might imply sacrifice? If we're putting our trust in something that, in a wisdom,
well,
something we don't totally understand, but
right,
know that.
Yeah. I think you're heading in the right direction. The invocation of the ideal is a way of putting the law of assembly to work. That somehow, unbeknownst to you, there is a pattern up there that can be the ideal pattern for teaching, it can be the ideal pattern for parenting, it can be the ideal pattern for your personal growth, it can be the ideal pattern for overcoming some blind spot or whatever it might be. You don't know what it is, but you trust in your higher, in the soul and the spirit to be able to work that out. And through that act of trust and reliance, you set in the wheels of the law of assembly in motion. And you are assembling the ideal. Yes, that's a very good observation.
So any time we're trying to act from the best within us too, you're actually drawing those higher forces in. I mean, you realize that there's the best within you, and I know I'm saying within us, but still, you're recognizing.
Well, but you have to, you know, the that's true insofar as it goes, but keep in mind that the first card that came up here was the devil. So if you're acting from the best within you, you may be exposing the worst within you in order to overcome it. And you may seem to be backsliding. Other people might look at that and say, oh, that's the worst within you. You shouldn't do that. And yet what you're doing is you're getting some direct experience in this assembly of forces that will bring that all to the surface so that you can then find the correct antidote to it to neutralize it. So be careful, because it may start with destruction rather than building. And that's part of the reason why you need a high level of detachment and maybe even a proven level of sacrifice or renunciation to say, oh, I'm not going to be traumatized if I shatter this form or that form. I'll be overjoyed. Any other comments or questions? Well, very good. One of the underlying elements here that I should have mentioned that didn't is that we need to start shaping our thinking around three new levels rather than just form and then looking to the meaning of the soul. Understand that there's another level behind that, and that's the level of significance. And that's the level that these energies are assembled, the staging ground. It's that which gives meaning its significance. And so you can understand that God is love, but what's the significance of that? Well, the significance is revealed by the law of assembly. And It's not revealed in form, it's not revealed in meaning, it's revealed the level of significance or being. Okay, that's it for tonight. Thank you, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks.